You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. I'm Frida Liu. Get educated and enlightened with the tools to help you succeed in your business on enterprise. BFM 89.9, I'm speaking to Sylvia Fernandez of VIA Group in our Aiming for Alpha segment. And this is part of our Communicating for Great Relationships series. And today's topic is about building rapport with your team. When I think of the word rapport, it seems like I have rapport with some and not others. So what exactly is rapport, Sylvia?
Rapport is about sharing values with each other. It's about understanding each other from different perspectives. Sometimes, you know, have you ever experienced walking down the street and you find like you meet someone for the first time and you're in deep rapport with them, and yet with other people you may work with them or in a family with them all the time and there is just no rapport? At a fundamental unconscious level, it's about sharing of values. You know, your values and my values are in tandem with each other. So we are aligned on that level, and we have this almost unconscious chemistry or feeling like a zzz that goes from me to you, and that's rapport.
And you can actually detect these values just in a little while.
Unconsciously, yes, because, you know, we have an unconscious mind, and it's very smart. It's like a memory of a computer, and it knows, you know, how to detect people with those sorts of values. And, you know, I used to experience this when I went out to networking nights, running my own business. I was always out there networking, and I would just allow myself to go to people who I needed to go to within the group of 200 that were there that night. You know, and inevitably, somehow I started to really get to a point where I knew I have to meet this person. I had no idea why, but I just gravitated towards them, and they were one of the three people I had to meet that night. So it's a very interesting concept once you can trust yourself, you know, to allow yourself to feel that rapport with other people. It starts to happen. It's a very unconscious thing.
Is it an art or a science, though?
Well, it's both. It's an art in knowing how to do it, but the science is the model of rapport. It's very simple, and that's what I want to talk about today. There are three things to get into rapport with people. This is the model of how to get into rapport with someone. The first one is matching physiology. So if you are, you know, sitting in a certain way, I would match your posture. If you cross your right leg, I would match your posture by also crossing my right leg. That's what we call mirroring, but I would then cross my left leg, which is what we call matching. So doing what the other person is doing. In Italy, you know, there are a lot of gesturing. Yeah, they use their hands a lot and very animated when they speak. So I would do that when I'm in Italy, you know, so I would gesture and match what they are doing. So that's in terms of physiology. Another thing that we can match in physiology is breathing, the rate of breathing. And that is something that we detect from the speed of the person speaking, because as we breathe, we exhale. Okay, so we're exhaling out as we're talking. And so if we both, as soon as I stop talking, if you breathe in when I'm, you know, when I stop talking, then we're both breathing in tandem with each other. And that actually is the most important thing to get into rapport if you forget everything else. So that's just a tip on physiology, how you can start to use the model of rapport to get in touch with the other person. We also have what we call tonality. How is that person speaking? So let's look at how I'm speaking. I'm speaking relatively fast because I only have a short, brief time here with you. So, you know, here in this part of the world, we do speak very quickly. But if you went to Northern Australia, let's say, and they say, "How are you, mate?" and "It's a good day, mate," that sort of thing, they speak with a much slower speed. And so if you met somebody who was speaking at a slow rate, you would match them in that way. If someone spoke with a very big voice, you would match them too. Or if someone had a gentle voice, you would speak with a gentility. Okay, so on the subject of tonality, there are so many things that we can do to match the person to get into rapport. The third thing is words. What sorts of words is the person using? You know, are they speaking with visual words, like "I see," "I can look," that's brilliant. These are visual, what we call predicates, okay? Or if the person's using auditory words, things like "That sounds good to me," "That rings a bell," "I hear what you're saying." Those are auditory predicates, okay? So these are the sorts of things we start to pay attention to. And so if I know that you're accessing your auditory predicate and you're saying, "Yeah, Sylvia, I hear what you're saying," then I would also match you by utilizing auditory predicates to respond to what you're saying.
It's about paying attention to a large extent.
Big time. at what we call second attention. So you're having a conversation at first attention, you know, just like we normally do. We just talk to each other. But at second attention, you're training your unconscious mind to pick up and observe the physiology, the tonality, and the words.
Right. So we're both dressed in pink, so I guess we're in rapport.
That's right.
What about when you talk about tonality? So that works for call centers then?
Big time, yes. You know, in call centers, that you don't have physiology, right? You're calling someone on the telephone. The person picks up the phone. You can't see what they look like. You have no physiology to match. So all you've got in the first five seconds when that person picks up the phone is tonality and words. Okay, so tonality is, you know, physiology is said to be the biggest factor in getting into rapport with people. But if you don't have that, then you've only got tonality, and that's the second biggest, right? So match the person's tonality, the speed at which they are speaking, the accent that they are using, the volume, you know, the timbre, the pitch. All of these things are things that great salespeople in call centers make headway because they're paying attention to the tonality and the words of the potential client.
And so a lot of these call centers actually teach the staff on what to do.
That's right. Yeah, we actually did some research on this and found one person to be extremely, extremely successful. And research was done on what he was doing. He himself didn't know what he was doing because he was a natural at it. And realized that this person could just fall into different accents as soon as the person picked up the phone, you know. And so he got into rapport with the person on the other side instantly. And so the person on the other side feels like, hey, this is somebody sort of like from my kampong, if you want to say, from my, you know, part of the world. Wow, this person understands me. Unconsciously, these are the things, like the penny drops at an unconscious level, and instantly the filters are open. It's like, you know, the floodgates open and communication happens.
It's a fine line on not sounding too fake as well.
Oh, absolutely. You've got to do this with total congruence. You've got to really believe in it and feel an absolute 100% conviction that you're speaking in that accent, you know, just like the locals do, and feel good about it, you know. If there's no congruence, yes, you may come across as if you're ridiculing the person or, you know, some sort of a fake.
Right. BFM 89.9, I'm speaking to Sylvia Fernandez of VIA Group in our Aiming for Alpha segment, and this is part of our Communicating for Great Relationships series, and today's topic is about building rapport with your team. How do cliques form in the office scenario?
Well, first and foremost, what we just discussed, the physiology, tonality, and words are definitely in place. But on top of that, we did a segment a few weeks ago on IQ, EQ, and SQ. The people who are technically sound tend to gravitate to each other. So if they're sort of on the same IQ level, they gravitate to each other. The people who are strong in EQ, emotional intelligence, they relate to each other. These people you generally find at the Coke machine, going out for a smoke or break, you know, they love talking, they relate to each other, they're kind of all part of the gang, you know, part of the clique. They're strong on that EQ sense, okay? And people who are passionate and driven, you know, who are spiritually intelligent, you know, tend to gravitate to each other too. So the cliques form based on, first of all, rapport. They're all in rapport with each other. But on top of that, you know, are they sort of coming together on a common level of IQ, EQ, or SQ? Or maybe two of the three.
Can it be a bit detrimental or dangerous in organizations?
You know, I'm a great believer of behavioral flexibility. I think if we operate in the same old way and we stick to that side of the dichotomy, then we're constantly sitting in our comfort zone. You know, I believe that for us to have that flexibility, yes, you know, we need to mix with people who are different to us. You know, we need to click, if you want to call it that, you know, with people who do things differently to us so that we start to learn how they are operating, how they analyze things or how they observe and think, you know, how they behave in life. Because there's so much to learn from people who are doing different things to us. Because if we are constantly sitting in the same filter and have this people around us who are doing the same things that we do, then we're never going to exercise any flexibility in our behavior. And life becomes dead boring. I mean, to me, I think there's so much diversity in the world, why not get out there and mix with people to learn different things that we don't necessarily know?
So can you build rapport with just about anyone?
Absolutely. Yeah, rapport is not about liking you or not liking you. Even if I detest you and you are my greatest enemy, I can still get into deep rapport with you. Because as we said before, it's an art and it's also a science. There is a model. You know, you just match their physiology, tonality and words, and there you have it.
It's just whether you want to be bothered or not.
Exactly. It's a matter of, at the end of the day, a choice. Do I want to be in close rapport with this person or don't I? You know, will my life be fulfilled even more than it is today if this person was in my life? You know, those are the choices we have to make. We can't be, you know, we can't have everybody in our lives with us in our life because there's only so little time and so little, you know, a chance to do things. So it's about choices. You know, do I want you in my life or don't I? Is it going to be good for you to have me in your life or not? So it's at the end of the day, a choice based on the values that we hold.
BFM 89.9, The Business Station. You're listening to BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Right. You know, I'm sure also in your personal experience, you've met some people who've just got a lot of barriers, right? What did you do? And I know you talk about matching, but how do you actually penetrate this person when they've got such huge barriers?
Yeah, whenever, you know, initially I used to be, when I was much younger, I used to worry about when I met people like that, especially in corporate at very senior levels. Then I realized as I did more and more of this work, especially in one-on-one situations, I realized the more the person has a barrier, the more vulnerable they are. That's why they need that barrier to cover up something that's inside them. And when we went past the barrier, I found that these people were absolutely delightful and lovely. And so the thought that I have in my mind whenever I meet people with huge emotional barriers, I think to myself, ooh, what's behind this? There must be a very vulnerable person behind that because they actually needed to create this mask and barrier for themselves to protect themselves. So I could see the positive intention of having the barrier, but I never let it stop me. Okay, so I go beyond that and just do my rapport thing. I just get into rapport with them by matching physiology, tonality, and words. And inevitably and slowly, the barrier just falls away because I'm focusing now on what's behind the barrier rather than the barrier itself.
It's interesting that you say vulnerability as opposed to insecurity.
Insecurity has a reference to something. I think vulnerability, we are all vulnerable in something or other. And, you know, society just teaches us to be heroes. Oh, we've got to show ourselves as being the best and the greatest and, you know, we're wonderful and we don't experience pain. But, you know, deep down inside, we're all human. And a human being does go through the whole range of emotions, you know, pain and pleasure and wonderful things and not so wonderful things. And the first step in understanding yourself as a human being is really getting in touch with those emotions. You know, in the past, emotions were looked upon as, oh, you're weak. But today I say, if you are in touch with your emotions, you understand exactly who you are. You know, you are in a far better place than the person who's behind that barrier, pretending that, you know, nothing phases them. Because lots of things phase them. They just don't want to admit it. So
BFM 89.9, I'm speaking to Sylvia Fernandez of VIA Group in our Aiming for Alpha segment. What sort of body language behavior do we need to look at within ourselves and with others?
You know, it's not so much body language. First of all, I don't want to call it body language. I'd like to say that physiology tells you more about the physical self. So it's our physiology. So what was the question again? What sort of physiology do we
need to look within ourselves? Some things that we need to monitor about ourselves and also to look out with other people.
I think when things are not going right, you know, when we're looking at communication right today, and things are not going well, and you're saying, gosh, you know, what's happened here? This communication isn't going the way I expected it to. Then it's something that you are doing. So that's when you need to check in. You know, what are my shoulders doing? Where is, you know, my head? Where am I looking? You know, what am I hunched? Or am I, you know, sitting upright? Or what's happening here? And what's happening with this person I'm communicating with? You know, are we matching each other? Or do I need to change something that I'm doing in terms of my physiology or my tonality or the way, you know, the words I'm using? Maybe I'm mismatching, what we call a mismatch in terms of the words I'm using, because this person is very visual oriented, but I'm using a lot of auditory words, you know. So there's lots of things. Once you understand this model of rapport, it helps you when things go wrong, and it gives you a chance to observe yourself and think about, gee, what am I doing that I need to change right now in the next second so that this communication then becomes more positive or powerful, or I get the outcomes and results that I was actually intending from the very beginning.
So there are heaps of books on rapport and things like that you can find in the bookstore?
Well, these are basic methodologies of neuro-linguistic programming. So if you picked up an NLP book, you would surely find that rapport. In fact, a lot of people who have read books on NLP think that this is all it is. They say, oh, NLP, I know it. You know, I've read about that rapport thing, that matching and all that. But it goes way beyond. This is the fundamental premise in NLP. It's about if we have rapport, we can have anything we want. We can get the outcomes that we want. We can have the communication that we desire.
So obviously, you know, what are the benefits of rapport for teams and how do you develop that?
You know, I've worked with teams and teams and teams in large companies, and I find that teams who are in rapport, wow, it's amazing because there's sometimes the unspoken word. You don't even need to say things. It's so unconscious. Everybody is in sync with each other. You know, there's, you know, time becomes it's not a consequence, you know, because everybody's in sync. The outcomes are being reached and things are just flowing, you know, because there's a fundamental motivation underneath that. When people are in rapport, they're excited, they're happy, they're enthusiastic, they want to do more than they really need to, you know. And then I've seen on the other side of the dichotomy, the teams that are not in rapport, where they say, no, this is my job and that's it, and it stops here and now the buck goes to you, you know. So it's very scary because, you know, managers who don't understand that this is the fundamental premise of team performance, that your team and you need to be in rapport to get the outcomes that the company has set in terms of a vision. That's pretty scary if managers don't understand that, because I've seen it go to waste where, you know, people are demotivated. They only want to do what they have been assigned. They want to pass everything else on. They're highly disengaged. They have no sense of cooperation with other departments, not even their own team. So outcomes are not reached, you know, or if they are reached, they take a lot more engagement, a lot more time to get to the impact of what the organization was planning in the first place.
So as a team leader or as a manager, what's your advice to organizations who wants to start developing rapport with team members?
Well, I'd say take stock of where you're at right now. So the starting point is always, where am I at? What's my present state? You know, what's my team like? What's my rapport with myself, first of all? What's my rapport with my team? What's the rapport within the team? So intra-rapport. Then what's rapport like with my team and other teams in the organization? If there's continual problems in a certain segment, I need to look at what's happening there. Okay, so it could be a values issue. It could be that the rapport is not happening because values of one team are very, very different to the values of another team. It's very common to have values of a research and development team to be very different to values of a sales team, for instance, because the salesmen just want to sell, you know, and the R&D people are looking to develop a really great product. So, you know, different values. So the team managers need to look at rapport on all of these different levels. And then even, you know, for a CEO, for instance, organization to organization, you know, are we in rapport with organizations in the same industry, or are we in rapport with, you know, organizations that are at the helm? If I'm at the helm of my industry, am I in rapport with other organizations that are at the helm of their industries? You know, what are the things that constitute rapport at that level? So how is it I'm at the helm of this industry? How is it you are at the helm of that industry? You know, even having discussions around things like that, because you'll find that there are a lot of commonalities. That's how you got to the top in the first place.
So now is not the time to go into denial.
Definitely not. No deluding yourself, delusional. There is no time for that anymore. We need to take stock of things, address issues if there are gaps, and, you know, make headway into addressing and changing things. You know, people hate that word change, but, you know, this is the time to start to have maybe weekly conversations about, are we in rapport with each other? Maybe just throw that out and allow people to come up with their own suggestions within the team. You know, yes, we are on this front, but no, we aren't on that. You know, start to open up the conversation.
Final question. Obviously, in your work as well, have you experienced where you're trying to work with a team and they're all not seeing it, and they're in denial? And how did you manage to break through with the team?
Well, you know, the thing is, I've got skills to help people on fronts like getting rid of their fears. A lot of people, if they are in denial, are actually couching some kind of a fear, some kind of negative emotion, some kind of element of, you know, guilt or anger or sadness. And so I would hone in on that, you know, to get a sense of where the team is at and what is each individual feeling in that team that they're not engaging. Okay, that's one thing I could think of. The other thing is, if the whole team is not engaging, I would say the finger's pointing to the manager. The manager's not doing something that they need to do because the whole team is not engaging. So, you know, I would sort of say maybe have a one-on-one with the manager to find out what's happening. Maybe his style of communication, maybe his sense of, you know, the team is in very strong integrity, but the manager isn't, or, you know, so there's a values clash. You know, there are so many things like that. So if it's little spurts of people, individuals in the team, you know, where you see that happen, then I would say I would really do one-on-ones to find out, hey, what's going on? Everybody else is on track. Everyone else is engaging. You know, where are you at? How is it, you know, I can still feel this barrier. So I'm a great advocate of conversations. I always say, you know, just ask the question and zip your mouth and let them answer you and find out what it is that's really sitting underneath that whole thing.
Thanks for your time, Sylvia. BFM 89.9, and I've been speaking to Sylvia Fernandez of VIA Group in our Aiming for Alpha segment.
BFM 89.9, the business station.